We're going to go now to the phone lines, talk to Brendan Batch, the play-by-play voice of the Canucks right here on Sportsnet 650. And Batch, we are going to start with our Regal Grooming Lounge poll question. It's about not just the loon, not about yesterday's game per se, although it does tie into it. We're trying to classify this Canucks start to the season. Is it good? Is it average? Not good enough? Or is it other? And feel free to pick an adjective of your choosing.
Well, I think it's probably two things. One, it's average, and it's also not good enough, because average is not the expectation anymore.
Right.
This is a team that, you know, now there are legitimate expectations with the moves that were made in the summer. Jim Benning pushed his chips into the middle of the table. The expectation is that they be a playoff team at the bare minimum and probably accomplish more than that when they get there, or if they get there. So to be 500 through seven games, you know, I can tell you the coaching staff and the players around that team will not feel that this level of play is acceptable. And even talking to, you know, some of the players and the coaching staff prior to yesterday's game and saying, hey, you know what, 6-game road trip to start the year, you found a way to come back at above 500 barely with the extra point and then the three wins. You know, that's pretty successful for having to start with 6 games on the road. And even then, players were saying, yeah, it was fine, but we want more. And now we've got 7 games at home, and we want to take advantage of that, and that certainly didn't happen last night.
Of last night's game, the 3-2 loss to the Minnesota Wild in the home opener, we played a fair bit of Travis Green's post-game audio on the show, and there was a lot of talk about creating offense or the lack thereof, and there was sort of, it's not necessarily a chicken and egg conversation, but it's very much, is it on the style of play and the structure and the format that Travis Green has implemented, the systems play? Or is it, as he said, more along the lines of, well, it's got nothing to do with sacrificing defense for good offense, because if you're going to be a good team in this league, you have to be able to defend and create chances. And there's also the personnel issue as well. The guys that are out there right now, there are certain ones that aren't producing offense. Overall, I just kind of said, look, the major talking point now moving forward for the rest of this trip is not just scoring goals, but generating the chances to score goals, and how they're not doing enough of that, especially at 5-on-5.
Yeah, which is certainly not the conversation we thought we would be having. You know, coming into the season, we all looked at the Canuck blue line and went, oh, I don't know, that's going to be an issue for them, and they might have to try and outscore their problems with their top nine. It does look to me like, you know, they have put an increased emphasis on the defensive side of the game. And you can understand why, because you look at the last few years, they've been one of the worst defensive teams in the league. We always have talked about how they bleed odd man rushes and high quality scoring chances. And for the most part, they've cleaned that up to a great extent.
Those are down
to start this season.
Yeah.
I mean, they do give up the one goal on the 2-on-1 last night that ends up being a big factor in the game. But for the most part, we saw those rushes with some, you know, a certain level of regularity that we haven't this year. So that part of the game is good. But, you know, Travis Green also always talks about how all of the facets of the game are tied together, and your breakouts feed your neutral zone play, feed your forecheck. Well, if you're, you know, trying to be better defensively, you may not be as aggressive on the forecheck. And that is where I think the Canucks may run into some issues here is, you know, you completely understand they want to be better defensively because, frankly, they have to be based on the way they've played the last few years. But, you know, when you are thinking defense first, you're not taking the same level of chances or risks in the offensive zone that would allow you to create offense. Now, this conversation doesn't worry me too much because I think it's a very good sign that they're better defensively. And I think they have the skilled players offensively that they will figure it out. But when a guy like Elias Pettersson isn't going to the level that you would like, and when, you know, the lotto line in general either hasn't had time together this season or isn't producing as a whole, you know, I thought one of the biggest indictments of their offensive play in last night's game was in the third period, there was a TV timeout, and coming out of the TV timeout, Travis Green had Juho Lamikko, Matthew Highmore, and Nils Höglander out on the ice when everyone was rested. Now, you know, we always see that he likes to shorten his bench in the third period, and he likes to give guys that are going opportunity, but if I'm Elias Pettersson or JT Miller or Brock Besser or Bo Horvat, and you know, you're coming out of a TV timeout in the third period of a game where you're trailing and you're putting fourth line players on the ice. That's an indictment. And, you know, that's a message, I think, to some of his top players, too.
Because that push was not there in the third period. We mentioned that earlier in the show. Like, considering the context of the game, Canucks do well to cut a 2-0 lead to 2-1. They go into the third. They're at home. And we mentioned on a number of occasions that the crowd felt like it was ready to pop, ready to do something. The first half of that third period, Minnesota dictated what they wanted to do, which was choke the life out of the game and limit the chances. And so you saw a response from Green like the one you just mentioned. Now, Green becomes, I mean, he's always going to be a really central and intriguing figure in this whole thing, but especially now, because we've had that sort of philosophical debate of, do you just preach patience and let these lines stay together, maybe let something marinate, maybe let them figure it out? That's the big picture approach. The micro approach here is, in a game, Travis Green's job is to take situations as they arise, manage them, and try and scratch out points and wins, which sometimes means doing the sort of mad scientist routine and juggling the lines and breaking things up, and, you know, where you see Pettersson drop down and playing with Highmore and so on and so forth. And it's going to be really interesting now, because that's the, you know, everyone says, oh, well, the team will figure it out. These forwards will figure it out. And I say, yes, I think they've got the talent to figure it out. But it's also going to be on Green to figure it out, because so many of these guys are new and you're still trying to figure out things just like duos and line combinations.
Yeah, I think when it comes to line combinations, Travis Green, especially when this team has trailed, has done a very good job of pushing the right buttons at times, where he will shorten his bench, he will move his lines to try and get something going. And there have been many occasions that I can remember where those changes have worked, where he's been able to find something that gets his team a key goal in a game that gives them a chance to come back. You know, certainly it didn't work that way last night, because you get the game-tying goal from the Pearson, Horvat, Garland line, which is really the one line that he's been loath to break up this year. But I can see both sides of this argument, because yes, you know, extended play together would allow for chemistry. But at the same time, this is a coach that, you know, is under pressure now, serious pressure, for the first time, you know, behind the Canucks bench, where, you know, I talked about those expectations off the top. Those expectations are there for the coach, too, and he's trying to win every single game and trying to use every tool in his toolkit to gain a competitive advantage. And we have seen from, you know, 4+ seasons now of Travis Green that, you know, leaving the lines as they are and waiting for them to figure it out is not his MO. It's not the way he approaches this. So, you know, I certainly can understand people that would say, you know, let things stay together for a longer stretch. And, you know, to a certain extent in the game last night, his hand was forced because Dickinson came out of the lineup.
Sure,
so he felt
sure.
He had to move Pettersson back to the middle to have four natural centermen. And that breaks up the flow of things. But I guess what I'm getting around to is that if you want Travis Green to keep the lines together, you're going to be disappointed, because that's just not the way he coaches.
We're speaking to Brendan Batchelor here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Batch, of course, was on the call for last night's home opening loss, 3-2, to the Minnesota Wild. You know, we probably should have started with this, Batch, but we got a lot of people texting in about the game itself. But the atmosphere, 595 days it took to get fans back into Rogers Arena, home fans supporting the team. I mentioned that it felt like there was a real energy that the crowd wanted to pop, not just because they were allowed back into the general public and allowed to go to a game again, but there's a real sense that they could have been a momentum builder, if you will, or whatever. You win the last two games on the road trip, you come home. Yes, it's a good Minnesota team, but they're not exactly world beaters. And the crowd was ready to lift that team, and I think we saw it a little bit in the third period when Horvat scored on a pretty good individual effort, that the energy was there. From your perspective, in the building, calling the game, is that an accurate assessment? There was some real juice in the building last night with all the fans there?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was great to have fans back, first of all. You know, you could feel the energy off the start of the game when they had their big, you know, new video opening and all the players being introduced. Everybody seemed very excited, very glad to be back. And, you know, when the Canucks scored their two goals, it felt like the roof was going to come off that place. So, you know, that was a positive thing. I think your analysis of the third period is bang on, where things were getting a little bit quiet because Minnesota was, you know, very effective at taking the life out of the game. And then when Horvat scored, the building came back to life and they were ready to get behind the Canucks as they mounted this late push. And unfortunately, that late push never came from the players on the ice. But, you know, I think as well, and, you know, we called games in the empty buildings last year too, that a lot of players and people around the game maybe took the crowd or lack thereof for granted, where suddenly when there's no one in the building, you realize how important a crowd can be. And there were a couple of moments last night where I just, you know, took the opportunity to just look around the building and go, man, it's so awesome that people are back. And hopefully as we go forward, the team on the ice can turn in some better performances for the fans that come to the rink.
I noticed on the first goal, the Chiasson power play goal, that there was a real pop from the crowd, in large part because the goal was much needed. I saw a lot of people on Twitter, including Bruff, saying like, God, they really needed that one. They needed to get on the board. Also, within that, it was Pettersson on a great pass to Chiasson for the goal, so there was a real lift that, all right, we might be getting back to seeing good old EP40. It didn't necessarily play out that way. I want to play you a clip of audio. We haven't done this for a while, so people that are just tuning in now, this is the question and answer from last night's presser with head coach Travis Green, and I wanted to play it full context, Q&A, just so everyone could hear the tone and the tenor and the response. So, Batch, I'll play it for you, and then I'll get your thoughts on the other side. This is from last night's post-game presser, Travis Green, when asked about Elias Pettersson.
We talked a lot about Petey and where his game is at. Any step taken in your mind today are still kind of the same?
I mean, it's tough after a loss when you're sitting here thinking about a lot of things, but I thought his game was average tonight.
That response to me, Batch, as a head coach that doesn't want to bury his guy who's struggling at the moment with the media, which is understandable, but also knows that the game isn't there and there's no point in trying to say otherwise.
Yeah, and, you know, we can all see what has happened with Elias Pettersson to start this season, where he has been average. I think it's a completely fair assessment, where you expect more out of this guy to be one of your top players. And, you know, to a certain extent, you can understand a bit of a slow start from him because of the time he missed last year and the time he missed this year through training camp. But he doesn't look like a confident player right now. And, you know, I thought he said all the right things when he was on with you guys talking about needing to simplify his game. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, Elias Pettersson is the best Elias Pettersson when he's really dictating the play and, you know, taking a certain level of offensive risk that, you know, right now, to a certain extent, he, to me, feels just a little bit tentative, maybe a little bit afraid out there. And I thought we saw flashes in his game last night of you know, him getting back to form. You know, you look at the Chiasson power play goal, where it's his one-time shot that he actually releases that caused Marcus Foligno to break his stick, or
right.
Maybe it wasn't Foligno, but Foligno gave his stick to one of the defensemen, and then they keep it in the zone, they keep the pressure. It's essentially a 5-on-3 because you've got a guy without a stick out there, and it leads to the goal. Those are the kind of small things that when Elias Pettersson is firing, when he gets that shot off, those sorts of things can happen, even if he doesn't score, and that pass to Chiasson on for the goal was another one of those things. But unfortunately, to this point in the season, they've been too few and too far between, and they've been more flashes than, you know, something we saw with regularity or have seen with regularity. It kind of in a vacuum for Pettersson specifically is reminiscent of his start to last season. And we know that things for the team went much more pear-shaped to start last year. So I'm not comparing the Canucks overall play to the start of last year, but this is kind of what we saw from Pettersson, where he was a little bit tentative. He wasn't as confident. He wasn't as decisive with the puck. And, you know, it's something that he's going to have to work his way through here, but the Canucks are going to need him sooner rather than later. And especially with, you know, 6 more games at home, this is a real opportunity for them to pile up some points if they can get their top guys like Pettersson rolling.
House of positivity here at the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. I thought the play of Justin Bailey was very encouraging. He was one of the guys in the post that Travis Green had some praise for on a night where he said guys were either just okay or average. He really liked Bailey's game. There's a couple things here. One, I know he was a guy that had kind of enamored some people because of his speed and the physical abilities. And, you know, he was besieged by a lot of bad luck throughout his time in Vancouver. The other thing, too, is this might be a glimmer of hope about this is what having the Canucks in Abbotsford, the Abbey Canucks, the AHL team, was supposed to be about. That if you build a good American Hockey League team and you have it close to home, you can have these call-ups that happen at a moment's notice, and these guys can come in and make a difference. And I do wonder if we might see this from other guys down the farm. I'm thinking guys like Lockwood, maybe a DiGiuseppe. They're close. The proximity is there, and they're good quality AHL players. And when you bring them up, they can make an impact and not just fill space and time.
Yeah, and you're right with Bailey. I think the bad luck is a key part of this conversation because, of course, he hurt his shoulder last year and that he missed training camp this year after testing positive for COVID, trying to come back across the border. It's entirely possible that Justin Bailey would have made this hockey team.
Sure.
Had he actually been at training camp. I know the organization has been high on him. When he's had chances at the NHL level, he's looked good. He's a big body that gives them some speed and, you know, can kill penalties. And we saw, you know, a pretty big shot block from him at one point on the PK last night. You know, that was part of what Travis Green said he talked with Justin Bailey about was, you know, we're going to send you down, but go down there, kill penalties, and we may need you in that role up here on the big team. And I thought he filled in admirably in that regard being called up. So we'll see where this goes from here with Bailey. Obviously, Dowling's supposed to be out for at least a week, so there's opportunity for him. But yeah, you're absolutely right. This is the benefit of the Abbotsford Canucks being just down the road, is these are the sorts of things that can happen at a moment's notice if need be, assuming, of course, that both teams are at home. If the Canucks are out on the East Coast and they have to get someone out there, then there are going to be challenges. But you're going to face those sorts of challenges regardless of where you put your AHL team when you go on the road. So, yeah, you know, it sounds like the Abbotsford club has got off to a pretty decent start to the season here. Bailey himself, I believe, had 6 points in his first five AHL yeah. games. So, you know, that should be the message to guys playing in Abbotsford and maybe a guy like Giuseppe, who thought he was going to make the team and didn't to start the year, is, you know, you're close down the road. We're watching. In some cases, Canucks management is going to be able to go out there and watch the games in person with a lot more regularity than they did in Utica. So we will be aware if you're playing well, and, you know, you will get a chance if you show well in Abbotsford that maybe will get you into Vancouver and get you into the lineup too.
We're speaking to Brendan Batchelor here on the Halfin and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Batch, of course, was on the call for last night's 3-2 loss, Canucks to Minnesota, home opener at Rogers Arena. Batch, rarely do we come into the studio and not get at least one, and by that I mean multiple texts, talking about the stagnant, static nature of the power play and the way that it's designed and the movement or lack thereof. I imagine you must have some similar thoughts on this, if only because you've seen every single power play this season up close and spent a lot of time analyzing it. It does seem as though it's not as fluid as some people would like it to be, yet the production is there on occasion.
It is. You know, the one thing that I have thought about this power play for a while is that it's too tentative. And okay. whether the movement is in there or not, they don't get enough pucks to the net, right? We've talked about Pettersson, you know, maybe waiting for the perfect shot too often. You know, it feels like they often eat up half the power play with, you know, Hughes has it at the top of the point, passes left wing to Miller. Miller looks, doesn't have a lane, goes back to Hughes. Hughes goes to the right side to Pettersson, who looks, doesn't have a lane, and goes back to Hughes. And the three of them pass it around up the top without getting the puck to the paint or without generating anything offensively.
Right,
so,
right.
you know, certainly movement and those sorts of things are going to help open up some of those things that maybe they're not seeing. So you would like to see some more, you know, cycling of the puck and guys switching positions and rotating and trying to create openings that way. But, you know, even if you don't get that in the power play, I just want the puck to the net more often. And, you know, it's easier said than done, because if you don't have the lane, you take the shot, it gets blocked, the other team clears the zone, and, you know, that's less productive even than, you know, keeping possession in the offensive zone and trying to wait for your opening. But it does feel like it's a power play that's waiting for openings that aren't coming, and as a result, you know, takes up too much time and doesn't actually create chances on the man advantage. So, you know, Jason King is, you know, a big part of that power play talk now that Neil Brown has left. You know, he's going to have to continue to work with these guys to see what he can find. One thing that I personally have liked in the look of their power play has been JT Miller in a lower role. I'm not a big fan of him working high on the left wing wall.
Yeah.
I would like to see Besser there. And I think the power play over the last few years has had its most success when you have the dual shooting threats of Besser and Pettersson on each side, where Miller, you know, maybe isn't the same level of shooting threat as those two guys. You know, to me, I would move Chase on off that top power play unit, which I know a lot of people have talked about and would like, even though he scored the goal last night.
Mm-hmm.
Get Miller down at the net front. I think he can do good work around the net, and let Besser and Pettersson just tee it up from each side and see what you can create that way.
Yeah, the Chiasson thing's interesting because, I mean, prototypically, he's the classic old-school net front power play guy. And, as you mentioned, scores a goal last night. So you're not going to really argue with the results. But the understanding when you take it a little bit deeper is what you were saying about pass happened for a minute and 40 seconds of that power play at the very least.
Yeah.
And that was, you were right, it was basically with a 5-on-3. And it wasn't even necessarily looking for the perfect shot. It was just a lot of deferring and then finally getting it to Chiasson. So the end result, great, get the goal, everyone's happy, power play converts. But as we, you know, a very common parlance in sports, the process, they stuck to it. It was a kind of painful process to watch unfold for, I'd say, like 4/5 of that power play.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a good way to put it, that everybody seems to want to defer to everyone else, right? And there are times where Hughes does a good job of getting shots through from the point, and I think Ekman-Larsson has done a really good job of that this season when he's been out there on the power play. You know, there was a brief stretch where he was moved up to the top unit early in the season, and he actually scored that goal in Edmonton against the Oilers in the season opener. But, yeah, it feels like, you know, Pettersson doesn't have a lane, so he gives it back to Hughes, and they defer to each other. To me, it's also a lack of urgency to a certain extent where, you know, I understand the message that if you've got the puck, they don't. If you've got them hemmed in the defensive zone, then you're tiring out the penalty kill and you can wear them down and create opportunities that way. But at the same time, you know, as I said already, getting pucks to the net and trying to create some chaos and havoc around the crease and maybe tucking home a rebound, as we saw Horvat do in Seattle at the weekend, you know, that to me, personally, and you know, everybody's going to have their own opinions about what the style of the power play should look like, but I just don't see enough urgency. I don't see enough shots. I don't see enough pucks to the net, and I don't see enough chaos being created around the crease. And that, I think, especially if you had a guy like Miller at the net front, who, you know, is also a pretty strong finisher, would be a good way to go to try and create some offense on the man advantage.
Next game on this 7-game homestand, the Philadelphia Flyers, who we've already seen once this season, so a couple early visits to and from the Flyers. It's a Thursday night game, and we will get a chance to see the Canucks once again respond to a bit of adversity. Lost the season opener in Edmonton, bounced back with a win over the aforementioned Flyers. Lost the two games to Detroit and Buffalo, bounced back with a pair of wins over the Blackhawks and the Kraken. A loss to Minnesota. I mean, if I'm looking at patterns here, and I remember my grade 11 math, we're going to get a positive result against Philadelphia on Thursday, but the team needs to go out and execute in order for that to happen.
Yeah, it's a game that they have to take advantage of because Philadelphia's had a quiet schedule to start the year. They've only played 4 games, but it's going to be the second half of a back-to-back. They're in Edmonton to face the Oilers tonight. So, you know, those are games where you're the rested team and a road team is coming into your building on the back-to-back. Those are games you really have to take advantage of, let alone that the Canucks have already shown they could beat the Flyers, albeit it was a little too close for comfort in that game in Philly where they came from behind. So yeah, you know, it's another opportunity to respond, another opportunity to kind of shift the narrative back in a positive direction. And, you know, make no mistake about it, this 7-game homestand, the Canucks need to pile up points. They did well on the road trip to stay above 500, but, you know, you want at least 4 wins from 7 games at home, if not more. And because you've already lost, now you're looking for 4 wins in 6 games, which, you know, seems like a much more difficult task, especially when you look ahead to the rest of the homestand and you see the red-hot Edmonton Oilers coming on Saturday night for what should be a really good test on national TV. So when you're playing a Philly team like that on Thursday, who you know you can beat and you know that they're going to be, you know, tired from having played the night before in Edmonton, that's one of those games where on the schedule, you kind of want to schedule that in there as a win because of the scenario. And if things don't go your way, then, you know, certainly the narrative around this team is going to get worse before it gets better if they can't win tomorrow night.
Canucks are back in action Thursday against Philadelphia, as Batch mentioned. Saturday against Edmonton, also as Batch mentioned. And then, Batch, we will talk again, I'm thinking, next Wednesday after the New York Rangers game on Tuesday night. Thank you very much for doing this. We'll do this again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Mike.